Hollow Sky Podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Steven.
And Kyle.
And it's Monday Hollow Cult. You know what that means. You've chosen us to hang out with you to get you through the work week. And we're going to do that to the best of our ability. Kyle's coming back in with some, trying to look at his screen over here.
Leopard Men.
Part two. So if you haven't listened to the last episode, you need to go back and do that. Get a feel for it and you can come back here. That being said, check us out on our social medias, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, Discord, Reddit. Search up the Hollow Sky Podcast. You'll find us there. Come join the community. Be part of the cult. It's a good time. You know the drill. If you have a paranormal experience you'd like to share with us, we can speak on it and get it out into the Hollow Cult, into the Hollow Realm. Kyle's got some information on how you do that.
The Hollow Skeet Skeet. I do have some information. HollowSkyPodcast@gmail.com. Write your story out in as much detail as you possibly can. Send it over there. From there, we will get it. It gets pushed down into the catacombs, or it will later be dug out. And like any archaeological find, it is a big deal, which you will turn into a big deal. Fame and fortune. What more could you ask for?
Nothing. Honestly.
Yeah, you guys are all going to be rich as fuck.
Honestly, just nothing. If you'd like to support the show, plenty of ways you can do it. We have a Patreon. Go look at that. We got extra episodes over there, all kinds of good stuff, bunch of different tiers. Go peep it. Check it out. We have some merch over at our website, hollowskypodcast.com. Go over there, look at some shirts, some hats, some stickers, you know, all kinds of good stuff. Rep the Hollow Cult. All the cool kids do it. The best thing you could do, share the show word of mouth. It's free. It's easy. It's quick. Share shows on social media. Go over to YouTube and follow and subscribe, all of that stuff. It's easy. Go to wherever you listen to podcasts and leave us a 5-star rating and review. And when I find them, I'll shout you out. And that'll help you get famous. This week's 5-star rating and review comes to us from our friend. It's Jane819. It's Jane says 5 stars, chill podcast. We are chill.
Chill.
I'll give you that much. A couple of friends that discuss strange things that occur in the world. These guys are pretty chill. See, told you. They don't have an overly sensationalist approach. They put effort into their presentations, an eclectic collection of topics. There really is something for everything. Wow, I need to learn to read. There really is something for everyone. They have great chemistry and have a way of making the audience feel connected and included in the conversation. I enjoy it. I think you will, too. Thanks, Jane. You're pretty chill, too, for the record.
Yeah.
Thanks for the kind words.
That was nice.
It was nice. It was nice.
Good little description there.
We appreciate it.
Yeah.
We appreciate being appreciated.
That is true. We are rather undervalued in a lot of aspects of life.
Yeah.
It's nice that you guys love us so much.
We love you.
Yeah. We're kind of a big deal. I didn't know if you know that or not, but we are.
Apparently not big enough to have sponsors.
That's okay.
According to the guy on Spotify.
We don't need sponsors.
Shout out to the CIA who keeps throwing their ads in front of our Spotify shows. Our CIA handlers are listening. Yeah. We see you. And we see you seeing us.
Yeah, we need, I feel like there should be some type of like sign-on bonus, some disclosed documents.
Yeah, send us the alien files.
Yeah.
Give us first, since you're putting your ad before our show, send us first dibs on the alien files.
That's fair.
That is fair. That's life.
Yeah, that's fair.
Speaking of sponsors, you can support our sponsors that you're going to hear from right about now. Hey, Hollow Cult. Did you know that there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your front door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flour for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with promo code HOLO1. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for.
They have Sleepy Time Advanced Gummies for a mind-soothing calm each night. They also have Morning Delta 9 Gummies for an energizing, focused mental boost to start your day. Mind Magic Gummies for focused, deep work and enhanced creativity. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a large selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much anywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get in the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your front door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered directly to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned before, Hollow Sky listeners gets 20% off their first order with code HOLO1. So head to mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code HOLO1 when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Be sure to try it today at mood.com.
And just like that, we are back. We're going to dive right into the Leopard Men.
Well, actually, we're not.
We're not going to do that.
Yeah, we're going to take a couple minutes here, have a conversation.
We're going to talk about some stuff.
Yeah. I just want to give a shout out to my son and his basketball team.
Hell yeah.
It was an awesome game today. They did a great job. It was one of them games where they were getting their asses kicked all game. And then last quarter, they come back. Nice. And literally with 3 seconds on the clock, or 6 seconds, full court pass to lay up and put them 1 point over for the, it wasn't the dub, because within that 6 seconds, the other team ran the ball down, shot, but got fucking annihilated, fouled. And then the shitty thing, the coach was able to not let the shitty kid shoot the free throws that got fouled and put their best player in to shoot the free throws, which ended up tying the game. So it was a tie in the end.
How does that work?
It was bullshit. It shouldn't have happened. But my son's team is currently undefeated.
Let's go.
So
buzzer beater, baby.
It's a proud moment, you know, because they played super hard. They've been working really hard. It's cool to see those, you know, 10-year-old boys get out there and play their hearts out. So it was an awesome game.
It's awesome.
So I'm proud of him for getting out there and kicking ass. It was cool.
Hell yeah. Buzzer beater.
Yeah, we recognize hard work around the Hollow camp. Okay.
So take notes.
Yeah. We give appreciation to that shit.
That's awesome.
All right. So moving past that, we're gonna get into the Leopard Men. Last episode we kind of dabbled with the paranormal side of the Leopard Men. This one is still going to have that, but we're going to focus more on what the colonial authorities ended up turning the Leopard Men into, which I think fueled a real world version of this. So this, you know, this might be a slight derailment from the Predator theme. However, I don't want to leave anything on the table when it comes to the Leopard Men. I want to kind of wrap it up cleanly. And that's, so we're going to look at the secret. Cause if you Google the Leopard Men, the first thing it brings up is the secret society. And there was other societies out there too. Apparently there were the Leopard Society, the Crocodile Society, and the Chimpanzee Society.
What?
All of them apparently had, and they were all in the West Africa area. They spanned several countries. There was a big region they ended up kind of expanding out to. But they all kind of operated in the same way, oddly enough, which is really fucking bizarre. But European colonial powers expanded into West and Central Africa in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. They encountered more than unfamiliar terrain here. The worldviews they encountered did not translate into Western categories of law, religion, or crime. The Leopard Men became known and kind of spun out of control for these colonial authorities. To the people who lived alongside the jungle, these accounts were not metaphors. They were explanations of fear, death, moral enforcement in an environment where human authority was rather fragile. But to colonial administrators, missionaries, and military officers, these explanations were far below acceptable. Governments cannot control spirits. Courts could not prosecute liminal beings. You also can't file reports blaming the jungle. It doesn't work that way. So we're running into a situation here where they're trying to come in and kind of create this government for all these people, but these crimes are being committed, and they're essentially just trying to figure out a way to control it.
Yeah, police it.
To police it, which you can't do.
No, I was going to say, anxious to see how that works out for them.
So by the late 1800s, British, French, and Belgian colonial administrations began asserting control over territories in West and Central Africa. Missionaries followed, then traders and military garrisons. That also brought forth Western legal systems, Christian theology, and Enlightenment rationalism. Which, of course, those systems weren't meant to factor in the paranormal and the unexplainable. So when the colonial officials began receiving reports of mutilated bodies, displayed remains, and killings attributed to these leopard men, they faced an interesting issue. So when the local populations had their explanations to the crimes, the leopard chose him, the forest judged them, he is no longer fully human. This is how local populations dealt with that situation. This was far from acceptable, so the colonial administrators began to reframe the situation to fit into more of a legal procedure that they could then control. So when these reports began piling up, they decided to put them under a single label, the Leopard Society. To their logic, if the killings were occurring, they must be organized, they're most likely ritualized, and they're obviously human-driven. So this allowed them to bypass supernatural causes and place them inside criminal conspiracy. Leopard men were no longer liminal beings of the jungle. They became members of clandestine cults using fear as a political weapon. Reports declared leopard societies as secret brotherhoods that were bound by oaths, practicing ritual murder and using leopard skins, masks, or claw-like weapons to simulate animal attacks. Once this was put into place, it could now start being controlled and governed. These societies could also be infiltrated and leaders could be arrested. Once confessions were extracted, order could finally be restored.
Very much feels kind of on par, maybe parallel with like the witch trials.
I literally make a note about that.
Oh, yeah.
Like word for word, I'm like, this starts like turning very, very Salem witch trial-y at a certain
That's
point.
The first thing I was, because at first I was thinking like, it's got some lycanthropy kind of vibes to it.
Sure.
Where they kind of outcast them to the forest and they're no longer human. They're animalistic, yada, yada, yada. And then once they were looking at putting together a punishment based, how am I going to say this? Basically a punishment for the supernatural aspects makes it feel very much like the witch trials.
Oh, absolutely. And like I said, it even gets worse, like more Salem witch trial-y as we progress. But, you know, if this is the case, if these were actually, oh, and real quick, that's the other thing you brought up, like lycanthropy. There are other episodes that I'm going to explore. I kind of dodged off on my next one because I didn't want to keep sticking with this narrative. But like there in the area, there's like were hyenas and shit. Yeah. You heard of those? That I'm going to eventually get into. And I guess those lean more toward witchcraft and stuff, which is very reminiscent of Skinwalker. Yeah. And so I'm excited to go down that avenue as well to hear more about that.
It is interesting how the lore...
Were hyenas, and there was something else too.
It's interesting how the lore kind of surpasses geographic lines. And
I think that's something that I'll forever be amazed by. And it's not just with lore. I mean, you have like the pyramids, and everything is has this capability or this time in history where every culture is just like, yep, this is a thing all at once for some reason. Yeah. It's so weird.
Splits off down two paths. One being like, were these things taught by beings from somewhere else that taught it across the globe? Or is it proof of a human collective consciousness?
Yeah. Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And until we have that answer, it is something that I will forever be fascinated by.
It's wild.
It's so simple, but it's so mind-blowing at the same time.
It's wild.
It is. Okay, so if these situations were actually paranormal, how are they able to pull any of this off? Well, people begin to confess. In multiple cases, accused individuals admitted to participating in leopard men killings. But these confessions need to be understood. Many of them were obtained during periods of widespread panic, under the threat of execution, in a system where denial could result in collective punishment, and after suspects have already been labeled as inhuman, which I'm sure in that time and place was a massive smear campaign for said person, because they had deep-seated beliefs that leopard men were real. And if you accuse someone of being a leopard man, I think that would fuck your standing with the community at that point.
Yeah.
If you were perceived as a real world leopard man.
Kind of also, yeah. It also just purely aligns with like the Salem witch trials.
100%. So some of these confessions included details that actually mirrored local belief instead of criminal plannings. People were confessing to blackouts, possession, dreams, compulsion, and loss of agency. Colonial dipshits would then interpret these confessions into their own views by saying things like, oh, these are obviously nothing more than superstitions layered over their guilt. That's obvious. So we've got something here. Steve's saying he's fucking possessed.
Colonial dipshits is the word of the day.
I literally have it written down too as colonial dipshits.
That cracked me up.
But it's crazy. It's so dismissive to me that they were like, no, what this is just them trying to like mask their guilt. That's what this is. They're just trying to find reasons to be like, do they really think they're going to be pardoned by saying they were possessed? I don't give a fuck. You still stabbed that dude. You're going to jail.
It's very much how they treat people now. Only now you just get medicated and called schizophrenic.
Yeah. Yep. Now, all of this, it really muddies the waters because you have the colonial shits coming to terms with this person being guilty and viewing it as guilt, and the local population would hear it and accept it because it fit their belief system. You have this, it's a two-tier thing that's somehow working even though it shouldn't be working. So the person being accused was really in this massively shitty place. Investigators would frequently be cited saying leopard claws were used as weapons by people to replicate animal wounds. This in itself would confirm human involvement, not supernatural beings. But you take that for what it is right there. And you see how that parallel fits for both structures. The locals are saying, no, this is the leopard men changing into leopards and fucking people up. Whereas the government's going, no. This is people using leopard claw-like weapons to commit these murders.
Yeah.
So it's literally like a parallel situation, and somehow it's working.
Yeah. It's like two sides of the same coin. Are people committing these murders and then using superstition to mask it? Whereas on the flip side of that, on the flip side of that, the government's like, these people are committing these and using the paranormal to mask it. Or on the flip side, the people are like, no, this is really, really happening. Like these entities are really doing the killings.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I get it. I didn't put it out there the way that I wanted to my brain.
Okay. It happens.
But it made sense.
Yeah, we all get stupid. But furthermore, these weapons were at the center of the secret society narrative. They explained how bodies would appear mauled without actual leopards being present. But this also brought about new problems to the picture. If the weapons were known, the societies identified, and the perpetrators arrested, then why did the reports persist? It's weird, right? Why did fear remain after executions? Why did villagers continue to avoid certain paths decades later? Fucking weird, right? It's weird. So here, I'm going to deviate slightly, but it was something I didn't really touch on in the first episode, and it kind of sparked my brain, and so I went digging around. And it also fits, you know, the secret society version. It's not a clear deviation, but this is one of the more mentioned details in reports, because I asked the question, all right, if I'm overarching this kind of in a Predator way on the inspiration for the movie and so on and so forth, how are these bodies being found? And this actually was it's mentioned quite often in the reports, even though colonial authorities and locals disagree about why the killings happened, the crime scenes are often very similar. The bodies were sometimes found elevated off the ground, often in trees or positioned above eye level. Villagers would see this elevation as judgment, warnings, or that the forest was showing the consequences to essentially pissing it off. On the other side of the coin, colonial investigators would say the perpetrators would stage the bodies to create fear, playing off the belief systems of the locals. And I'm sure everyone assumed, as I did, elevation also mimicked how leopards would store their prey.
That's what I thought when you said it.
Other aspects that are strange is that many reports would describe how injuries appeared similar to leopard attacks, but were slightly unusual. They had marks that resembled clawing, removing of specific tissue, which we did talk a little bit about, or damage not matching typical feeding patterns. Is that your Roomba?
Robot vacuum?
Okay, no, but it probably won't even really get picked up. If you hear anything, it's the fucking Roomba. He's out there gnawing at the door.
My bad.
It's good. Okay, so predator damage, like actual, like a leopard as a predator, not predator movie. Predator damage is usually rather chaotic. It's a lot of tearing and irregular bite placements. Observers often claim that the marks appeared more symmetrical or patterned. Wounds seemed to be concentrated in specific areas, and that damage looked placed rather than scattered.
which does kind of lean toward maybe some sort of ritualistic kind of killing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
them,
exactly.
Them being similar in most cases.
Right. Villagers believe this meant the leopard spirit was removing something symbolic, or that it was more judgment than hunting. Once again, colonial officials say it was specialized claw-like tools, controlled cutting, which is further proof of this, and it was a form of ritualized or staged after death. Now, this is kind of controversial, but it does show up. It's noted in some of the reports that cuts looked clean. Of course, this is a point for pushback by people. However, Steve and I have heard and seen in a lot of cases where, now mind you, they are alien cases, but we have seen cases where cuts and damage and wounds are surgical precision.
Yeah.
And I think that's what these people are referencing. Like, these cuts are extremely abnormal for anything that we have. Because you would think even some of the knives they have over there are not scalpels.
Especially if they're, like, trying to push the narrative that if people are committing these crimes, they're using leopard claws as weapons.
Yeah.
You're not going to get surgical precision.
No.
With someone using some sort of Wolverine-esque glove that's got leopard claws in
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And it's kind of funny that you say that.
That you're just, kind that's just you not going to happen.
Because that is kind of a thing here later on. So, in most cases, the crime scene was not hardly disturbed at all. Also, in cases where leopards take prey, they take it into concealment, typically. They wouldn't normally place bodies in the open for people or animals to easily see. So there's another oddity about these displays of the bodies. One thing that really stands... Go ahead.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
A leopard's not going to display its kill
no.
to ward off other... Essentially ward off other prey. You know, they're going to stash it so other leopards don't come and take it.
Exactly. One thing that really stands out when you start comparing the paranormal interpretation and the secret society version is that both sides agree on one detail. The body was never just a body. It was a message. Whether you believe these killings came from ritual practitioners or something more supernatural, the placement and presentation of victims mattered. In many reports, the bodies weren't hidden. They weren't buried or dragged away into thick brush like a normal predator would do. They were positioned in places where they would be seen, at the edge of paths, near village boundaries, elevated in trees, or placed in ways that forced people to confront what happened. To locals, that wasn't just violence, that was communication. The force was believed to speak through consequences. When someone violated a taboo or upset balance, the leopard man wasn't just ending a life, it was reinforcing and warning. You can almost think of it like a courtroom without walls, where the jungle itself was judge and executioner. Colonial investigators saw something different. To them, this was psychological warfare. They believed secret societies staged scenes deliberately to amplify fear, turning existing belief into tools of control. By placing bodies where everyone would see them, they could strengthen the myth of the leopard men and discourage resistance. And here's where, you know, it ties back into that predator idea. The kill isn't about feeding. It's about display. It's about dominance. It's about letting others know that something watches from the trees and decides who crosses that line. The body then becomes evidence, warning, and a ritual all at once. And whether you call that spiritual enforcement or human manipulation, the effect is the same. Fear spreads faster than any weapon could. Another odd thing about this is that when authorities would come into areas and dismantle the leopard societies, they essentially stomp out the offender. But in some cases, this did not resolve the phenomenon. Sometimes violence would stop for a little while, only to later resume. Don't get me wrong, it seems that the secret societies were actually a thing, I'm not trying to sway anyone away from that. It seems that it actually really did happen, which could be for many reasons. My guess is that they knew local lore. They decided to mimic it in their own way. Some rumors say that it was also about witchcraft, which we see in the Skinwalker lore. Another thing that gets sprung onto the society version of the Leopard Men is cannibalism. This it gets kind of fucked up here, so listener warning.
Trigger warning. Cannibalism.
It's because it's... I don't get graphic, but the implications of it are disturbing. Apparently, former members have come forward admitting to this as well. I know some reports are because if you go digging around, it seems to, for whatever reason, it's like highly contested. It's a weird thing where some camps are like, yep, 100% cannibal. It happened. Other people are like, nope, it's all just hearsay. It definitely didn't happen. So it's really back and forth bad.
Yeah. It's because it's such a taboo subject.
Yeah.
Even if the parties are guilty of participating in it, people trying to like shed that light on them will almost pull back on it because cannibalism is such a taboo subject.
That's crazy.
Because if you look like even in archaeological circles, when you talk about like ancient man who like you have to assume probably took place in cannibalism.
Yeah.
Probably partook in cannibalism. Just out of sheer need because times were just absolutely terrible. It's still taboo to talk about in archaeological circles.
That's crazy. Cause like for someone like me, it just seems factual. Like you either did or you didn't.
Yep.
There's no reason to bury it. I don't know. Like the facts are just facts.
When they'll find like human remains, like ancient human remains, and there's similar marks on them that they find on butchered animals, they try to cut it off right there.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Just put that shit out there. Be like, yeah, they fucking ate people. It's weird.
Because, I mean, you don't hear about it very often.
No, you really don't. Now that I think about it.
It's just so taboo. The idea of people, like, look at the times now.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I mean, it should definitely be a taboo subject that one does not participate in. However, it does happen. And it shouldn't. But, like I said, former members came forward admitting to it. I think, though, that the spin on the topic was the reason they partook in these rituals was because they wanted... This is a quote, like a quote-unquote official narrative. I don't know that I buy this. I think this is... Because this is a supposed explanation as to why the cannibalism took place.
Semi-official narrative.
Yeah. I don't think this is true. But apparently, they partook in these rituals because they wanted to create a trade route between the different towns. Because at the time, every town was its own political entity. So those who wanted to join the Leopard Society had to sacrifice a member of their own domestic group in a cannibalistic feast. That doesn't necessarily mean family members. I guess essentially an easy way to put this would be that all the chiefs from all the different villages got together, and in order to trust each other and trust that they had power and so on and so forth, they could further the Leopard Society. They had to be like, all right, Steve, if you're really in command of your whole tribe, well, you're going to have to donate one of them to us, and then we're going to have to partake in eating them.
So what you're telling me is that tribal community government leaders...
Yeah, that is weird.
We're eating people.
That is weird. Anything about that until you just pointed it out.
That sounds familiar to me right now.
Yeah, that is pretty.
Sounds really familiar.
Yeah, it really does. That's fucked up. I didn't think about that when I was writing it.
Some rituals die hard.
That's fucked up. Maybe it was a thing. I don't know. It just feels a little bit narrative-y. But hey, so didn't whenever people said that about our current situation.
The whole world is a stage.
Yeah. So, you know, now you ask, what about the travelers? Because apparently other people would go missing too. And what they would do, this doesn't seem very smart. I don't think so. However, I'm not that smart.
Same.
So they would supposedly sacrifice their own, but in order to keep cover about them, they would also just hit up random travelers and shit and sacrifice and eat them too. That way it didn't bring too much suspicion on only town folks going missing.
I mean, I see the scattered logic behind it.
Well, of course. I just don't really know. I don't know. It just feels off to me. It
feels like you draw more attention the more people you fucking eat.
Yeah.
And it's weird that the different territories, I'll call them territories or whatever, are the different groups are territorial to the point to where they'll leave the bodies and such as, like, in my opinion, territorial markers, but they'll also, the leaders will also get together and be like, hey, if you want to be part of this, we got to eat one of your folks.
It's weird, right?
Yeah, it is weird.
It's really fucking strange. I don't really get the logic behind it. And, you know, this could also be, a lot of this information was most likely found in colonial reports, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So take that.
Colonial dipshits.
Yeah, colonial dipshits. So in the 1920s, Lady Dorothy Mills spoke with district commissioners, and it was noted that members of the Leopard Society would offer up and help procure someone in their town or their own family for the sacrifice. A man would offer up his wife, child, brother, whatever. Usually to avoid suspicion, the victim would be kidnapped from outside the home. But this wasn't always the case because it was reported that at times the Leopard Society would actually raid fucking houses and just yank people. So my guess is the case, or in this case, was that they had established a dominance in the area and people feared them, resulting in no one coming forward to do anything about it. Also, if the men wore costumes, then it would be hard to identify people. And I think what may have actually happened is that, because if you think about it, it could play out this way, where you have these villages that have all this lore about the leopard men, right? Colonial fucktards start moving in. Maybe they start influencing some of the tribes, like, hey, this is all bullshit. It's just people. But the powers that be, or, you know, the chiefs of the town and whatever, are like, you know what? Like, maybe this is all bullshit. But what if we start to kind of cash in on this and kind of establish a society? Which is asinine. It's crazy. It's out there, but
I can also see how it's like a big power play. Like, okay, we need one of you in your village to sacrifice someone close to you, or else we're going to choose for you.
It's also crazy, too, when you point out the connection to current times, because that's exactly what Epstein did. Basically got, like, hey, if you want in with the compromised people, you got to be compromised too.
You got to do some fucked up shit.
Yeah. That's fucked up.
It's weird.
That is fucked up. I don't know. That's gross. It's weird that it's like it's like a old, like it's been around for ages and we're all just too stupid to ever pick up on it.
Yeah. It's power play 101. It's
fucking crazy.
Blackmail.
It's crazy. Yeah. Everybody's got to be blackmailable so we all can trust each other.
Power play 101.
It's crazy. So During a criminal trial, a member of the society confessed that he had been present when a girl donated by another member had been murdered, and all of them partook in eating her. The victim in question was purchased as a slave. The child in question was beheaded, and the owner then divided the girl into four sections.
What the fuck?
Cutting all the way down the middle and in her center, and then at sideways at middle. She was cooked and eaten by everyone. And what's even crazy is, like, sometimes people can't make the rituals, right? I got other shit to do. I got fucking dance night with the kids. I can't make it. They just save it. They just save parts
doggy
for that.
Bag.
Yeah, doggy bag it for
here's
those people.
Here's your leftovers.
That's fucked. Ugh. Another report came out that even a niece had been sacrificed, and that after it was all said and done, literally the only thing left was skull and bones. Due to the testimony, the uncle was actually convicted and put to death, which rightfully deserved, and I hope it was nothing less than the most painful of deaths, enough to carry on into the afterlife for eternity. You deserve whatever eternity has for you, bud. You can find plenty of reports like this over the leopard men in the society. It's all over. And like I said, like Steve pointed out, didn't take long for this to turn very Salem witch trial. It was noted that other societies popped up, like I mentioned, leopard, crocodiles, chimpanzee. People began to accuse everyone of this. And if you were found guilty, you would be enslaved or even burned to death. So you know what happened. People started making accusations, taking out political rivals.
Off to the races.
And that's exactly what ends up happening. So what's crazy, though, we went on about the knives and the costumes these people wore. It was reported that in some areas, the colonial authorities weren't even able to find leopard skins or knives resembling leopard claws. In Nigeria, a fuckload of murders took place. It was about 196.
Jesus.
It was unclear to people who was committing them until a man was finally caught in connection with some of the murders. He confessed that he was in the Leopard Society and admitted that they would take people and sell their body parts for making medicine for themselves. Even a police officer comes forward and said that he had known about the group for at least a year, which led people to believe that the group had essentially conspired with local authorities. In Nigeria, they found evidence of the costumes and that the group would, Then you get accusations of the chief and his son being a part of the Leopard Society. More and more costumes and weapons get found, only for the local police to be like, well, just because we're finding costumes and knives doesn't mean these guys were actually doing it.
No.
There's not enough evidence to convict them, so we got to let them go.
No. It's all circumstantial.
Yeah.
Plenty of people are dressing up in leopard skins and running around the forest with knives.
Yeah. Yeah.
That doesn't mean you're a murderer.
No.
Just because we caught you with human flesh stuck in your teeth doesn't mean you're a cannibal.
True. It's fucking true. So in the Congo, there was a Anioto Society, which was another name essentially for the Leopard Society. Apparently, so if it's wrong, I apologize, but it's just what I'm reading. But this society was attacking people and, of course, murdering them. And they were purposely leaving traces meant to give impressions of leopard attacks. The Anioto Society reportedly sprung up due to the Swahili-speaking slave trading chiefs who dominated the region. So they essentially do this out of retaliation, like a resistance. But, and this is an aspect of, you know, how I can definitely believe people would take this lore and adopt it. Like they use it as like a freedom fighting technique, which makes sense. But the, you know, 'cause the lore is focused around punishment, judgment, and so on. This easily could have inspired people to form and find their own judgment, so to speak. But the Anioto Society would turn on the colonial government, and many of the victims were of said government. They're not all that righteous because they would also sometimes partake in the... Steve, you got a problem, bud. You don't like old Carl down the street there? We'll go ahead and take him out for you.
Deal.
Take him out for you. We'll do a little hitman style contracts. You know,
fuck Carl.
Motherfuckers got to eat, right? Quite literally sometimes.
It does make you wonder. Now that you got people coming forward, it does make you wonder if it's essentially life imitating the supernatural aspect of it, or is it the supernatural like imitating life? Like, did the supernatural occur first, presenting the fear, and then you have humans kind of taking that fear and running with it, or was that the case all along?
I hope that's the case. I hope the supernatural came first. You know, I really don't want it to be the other way around for however that would work.
Because like you said, the fear is so ingrained in some of the communities that they refuse to use trails and paths decades down the line,
right,
from where some of these encounters took place.
And that's the interesting thing about people, though, is that you're going to have, out of that group, out of that village of everybody that believes, guaranteed, you're going to have at least one asshole that doesn't fucking believe it.
Because we talked about it last episode where this is primo prime psychological warfare.
Yeah.
You've seen it in World War II. You've seen it 100 times before. And it just makes you wonder where the supernatural ends and where the human side begins. Because you know there's a gray area. You know those overlap.
Yep. Yeah, and all it takes is for that one crazy asshole that doesn't believe to somehow get that crazy idea of like, wait a minute.
We can manipulate
people's
emotions.
Yeah, we get away with a bunch of shit. All we got to do is fake dress up as a leopard and stab motherfuckers, and we can do whatever we want.
I wonder if there's any accounts of the manipulative fake leopard men encountering the real leopard men.
Guaranteed there is somewhere out there.
That'd be fucking sick.
I wasn't able to find it, but I guarantee it.
That would be sick. Them out there staging a ritualistic murder, and then the real ones come through and are like,
hey, bud.
Show you ritualistic murder.
That's not how you do that.
Surprise.
I'm gonna go ahead and show you how, though. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Let me show you how to be ritualistically murdered.
All right, so back to the NEO, though. In this version of the society, membership was passed down from father to son, or maternal uncle to nephew. New people who wanted to be adopted into this society did, in fact, have to give up a family member to be sacrificed to prove their loyalty and discretion. I also read of a section that told of a medicine man that would help with medicine, obviously. However, he would teach people how to make gloves with metal claws or blades coming out of them.
Wolverine hands.
Wolverine hands, bro.
Damn it.
Wolverine hands.
Damn it.
Something really interesting, though, because the secret society version doesn't erase the paranormal. It actually blends with it through ritual medicine. Across many parts of West and Central Africa, the line between medicine, spirituality, and power was never clear-cut. Medicine men weren't just healers. They were interpreters of the unseen. They prepared charms, mixtures, and rituals that were believed to alter a person's state, whether that be physically, mentally, even spiritually. Some accounts describe initiates undergoing preparation that went beyond simply putting on a costume. They were said to take part in fasting, isolation, or trance-like ceremonies designed to help them embody the leopard's nature. To colonial observers, this looked like witchcraft or dangerous superstition. But within local belief systems, it was a transformation, not into an animal in the literal sense, but into something that carried the authority of the leopard. Protective medicine was also a huge part of the fear surrounding leopard men. People believed certain substances made them resistant to weapons or allowed them to move silently through the forest. Whether that was psychological confidence, ritual belief, the result kind of ended the same. They seemed untouchable. And this is where the paranormal and secret society narratives start to overlap once again. If someone truly believed they had taken on the spirit of a leopard, their behavior would change. Their posture, their movement, even the way they interacted with others might feel unnatural. To villagers, that confirmed transformation. To colonial authorities, it looked like rehearsed intimidation. But either way, the ritual mattered, the medicine mattered, because it turned into the leopard man, or turned the leopard man into more than just a person wearing claws. It turned them into a role, something larger than the individual. And honestly, that might be one of the biggest reasons the legend survives. You can dismantle a society, you can arrest members, but you can't easily erase a ritual identity that people believe changes who they are.
Can't get rid of the lore.
Right. And this is kind of off topic, but as I'm digging around, I see this old magazine cover, right? And it's got this white dude in like this cheese ass safari hunting get up, right?
Colonial dipshit.
The colonial dipshit, like fucking tan hat with the fucking tan button up.
Yes.
And that old school rifle.
Like the dude from Jumanji.
100%. Yeah. Dead on. And then you see this African dude in the bushes back there in his leopard outfit, and he's got his fucking glove claws on. And the way he's standing, I'm like, holy fuck, was this how Black Panther was born?
Oh, I didn't think about
that. Bro, the fucking image looks just like Black Panther. 100% looks like Black Panther. Like the way it's like the way he's standing in this, like, cause it's like, it's not a real photo. It's like a drawn.
Yeah.
It's a drawn photo on the front of a magazine.
I wonder when that came out. It looks
just like Black Panther, except it's instead of Panther, they're in a leopard. He's in a leopard kind of outfit.
Makes you wonder if the Marvel guys stumbled upon some of that.
It really does. Cause I mean, as soon as I saw it, I'm like, bro, that's Black Panther. It's 100% Black Panther.
Interesting.
So I just thought that was kind of interesting. There's one idea that kind of kept coming back to me while researching the secret society side of the leopard men, though. And it's something that doesn't really get talked about. What if the leopard society wasn't just exploiting fear? What if it was responding to something people already felt long before the societies existed? Think about it. Before colonial reports, before arrests, before trials, villagers were already telling stories about hunters in the trees, about beings that watch from the edges of the forest, about judgment coming from something older than human law. And then suddenly, you have real people putting on skins, crafting claws, learning medicine, stepping into that role. That doesn't just look like deception, that looks like imitation. It's like they weren't inventing a monster, they were trying to become one. Maybe some of the societies believed that they, or that by embodying the leopard, they were restoring balance. Maybe others used the legends as a shield, knowing fear would protect them more than weapons ever could. And maybe, just maybe, the reason the legend never died is because it didn't start with the societies at all. The secret society explanation tries to put a human face on said unknown. It says the leopard men were just organized killers, just ritual practitioners, just people hiding behind masks. But here's the problem. Even after societies were dismantled, even after confessions extracted, even after colonial courts declared the mystery solved, people still avoided certain paths. They still warned children not to follow voices from the trees. They still felt watched. So maybe the leopard society wasn't the origin of the hunter. Maybe it was a reaction to something deeper, a cultural memory of a predator archetype that shows up across the world in different forms. And that's where this stops being just a historical mystery. Because once you realize humans were stepping into this role of the unseen hunter, using ritual medicine and fear to become something larger than themselves, you start to see the pattern repeating in myth, folklore, and even modern storytelling. The leopard, the watcher, the thing that hunts from above and turns the forest into a proving ground, which sounds familiar. Maybe the predator story didn't come from one event or one society. Maybe it came from an idea that's been following us through the jungles for centuries. The belief that somewhere out there, something watches, and sometimes humans try to become it.
It does kind of lean into that thought process that at some point in our human history, we weren't the top of the food chain.
Yeah.
It leads into that uncanny valley feeling where something humanoid at one point was something to be feared by humans.
Because it is a cultural thing. Like there are so many cultures around the planet that everybody says the same thing when they go in the wilderness by themselves. They feel like they're being watched.
It's weird.
They're feeling, and realistically, like, think about it, Steve, around here. For the most part, we have fuck all to worry about in the woods.
Yeah.
If you really think about, like, we don't have bears.
No.
We don't have moose.
Snakes would be the only thing.
Yeah. And half the time, you don't even see them fuckers. No,
maybe a mountain lion.
Every once in a while, a bobcat. Maybe an obscure mountain lion. But I mean, those are way rare. But like you said, there's so many cultures that have the same shit.
And it's almost like they cling on to whatever is the main predator in that geographical region, like the leopard, like the crocodile.
That is weird.
You know, almost trying to make sense of whatever this thing was that has brought on the fear. You know, you can't necessarily be like, hey, it's just a human type predator, because there's no fear in that, you know. Yeah. Deal with human predators like all the time. But when you make it, when you blend the supernatural and you blend superstition into it, it changes it. It takes it to the next level. It turns it into that psychological warfare. Turns it in. The unknown aspect is what makes it terrifying.
Yeah. Also, and you know, like I pointed out, but it is real. Like it's not as difficult as people think. And I don't know that if anybody's ever. Okay, so here's a good example. Have you ever listened to a particular song and it makes you feel a type of way?
Yeah.
Like it, I don't know, it's just like you believe it, you know?
Yeah.
For them, I could definitely see ancient peoples believing in, say, the leopard men. And then, you know, medicine men or shamans or people wanting to create a medicine, quote unquote, that kind of embodies the spirit of the leopard man. And then even if it was fake, even if all that's fake, but somebody is like, hey, Steve, if you drink this, you're going to become the leopard man. And like you have 15 people that are like, no, you really will. It's going to give you all this strength. You're going to be a fierce warrior. Like that placebo effect is fucking real.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where if you believe it enough, you may not turn into a leopard. And you may not move super silent, but what if because the way you think and the way you're now approaching it, you are moving a little more silent.
Yeah. 100%.
You are moving a little more agile because of how your mind is manipulating your body at that point.
And it's things like that that essentially turned into modern medicine.
Yeah.
You know, because you think about it across the board, medieval times, like European times, they all had things parallel to that, right?
Yeah.
So essentially say you broke your toe. Your toe's all fucked up. You can't run at 100%. But if the local magician, medicine man,
wizard
gives you some painkillers, which is this wild medicinal plant he's found out in the woods that he's mixed up this concoction with fucking, I don't know, bat hair and butterfly feathers and everything else. Butterflies don't have feathers. Mixed it up and gives it to you. All of a sudden, the pain that's keeping you from operating at 100% is gone. Now you're operating at 100%, still with a bum ass foot. Essentially, it's a superpower.
Yeah.
And
you could have labeled that however you wanted.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
You could easily, and the people would, because they may not believe it at first, but the second that pain, you know, that ibuprofen kicks in, they're going to be like, holy fuck.
Exactly.
He was not lying.
Yep. You've got a broken leg.
That dude is talking to somebody on the other side of the veil. I fucking promise you that.
Oh, yeah.
He's a real wizard.
And that shit, back then, you got to think, back then there was no social media. There was no entertainment. That kind of stuff was real life.
Hell yeah.
Lore was real life. And when they sat there and saw that stuff, you take XYZ of this concoction and it makes you run 10% faster than you did before you took it. That's some different level shit.
I feel, man, real talk. I kind of wish like that was the mentality of today. I definitely don't want to go back to like fucking living in a goddamn castle with rocks and shit.
Castle would be cool.
But like I can really appreciate the mentality of just like, you know, Steve being like, Kyle, I talked to the fucking flower gods and they made me this medicine for you and now you're gonna be enchanted and I take it and I feel better. I'm like, holy fuck.
You become the Fey Lord.
The fucking the flower gods are dope. I feel like that's a little bit more of an exciting time to be alive than be like, nah, this is a bunch of fucking bleach and stuff that we put in a pill and you you eat it and you feel better for like 15 minutes.
Your insurance goes up. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I feel like it'd be a little bit like, maybe it'd just be a little bit funner to be alive. If
I mean, they're still eating people now. So why the fuck not?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I ain't trying to eat people, but. I guess I'm just trying to like have fun in life instead of
it sucking,
eating bleach
instead of being a colonial dipshit.
Yeah. Yeah. I ain't trying to do that.
I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Eat a fucking burrito and
I get it.
Hang out and fucking think of cool stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like how I'm really digging this. I really kind of was soaking this one in. And then
it was cool, man. Like to kind of have that crossover. It's not like an approach that we have a lot where you have these like authorities come in to try to explain this whole entire situation away. And then you have the locals that are on the other side, but somehow the story is interweaving itself together and it shouldn't work at all, but it's somehow working.
And like you said it perfectly when you said it's feeding off of each other.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's a perfect storm.
I feel like that's so rare. And rightfully so. It should be, you know, rare, but it's just we don't come across that version of it very often. And I'm kind of glad it played out this way where
we
got to explore it a little bit.
I love that it's established folklore that I've never heard of.
Same. That's what's making me so excited about like chasing down these avenues is I'm finding shitloads of things out there that I have never heard of. And a lot of it is from other countries, so you guys will be excited about that. But we do normally stick around the United States because that's where we're from. And that's where I feel like that's a lot of where our curation is.
I don't speak other languages very good.
That too.
That's intimidating when I have to say a lot of words that I don't know.
That too.
I don't say words I do know that good, as you can tell from me reading the 5-star review today.
Yeah, my next one's going to be on the orange bunion.
That sucks.
I know that nobody knows what that is, but you'll get it whenever the episode drops.
That sucks. Oh, well, Hollow Cult, thanks for hanging out with us today. Thanks for sitting in on the folklore that could potentially have spawned whatever. I mean, not spawned. They could have been dealing with the Predator being from the get-go.
Maybe.
And this was just their way of trying to make sense of it.
Sure. Absolutely.
Who knows the timeline?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thanks for hanging out with us. Check us out on all the social medias. Share this episode. Go to YouTube and subscribe to our channel. We're trying to get it. 2026 is going to be the year of us getting it. And, yeah.
See, look, there's that picture I was talking about.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
It's like Black Panther, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's so cool.
Like it's so, like, it's such a Black Panther pose.
Yeah, that's sick.
It's kind of a cool magazine.
It's the Man magazine.
Yeah, it is, too.
Yeah, thanks for hanging out with us. Until we meet again, stay safe, stay weird, and try to avoid the colonial dipshits.